May I proceed?
Thank you. May it please the court, I'm Thomas Kimmel, registration number 9043. With me at council table is Lawrence Cohen, and I would like to reserve about 5 minutes for rebuttal, and I understand that the yellow light will go on at that point, so that's what my intentions at this point. This case presents the court with a prime opportunity to clarify the law as to the recovery of attorney's fees in a breach of fiduciary duty circumstance. This is a classic fiduciary relationship situation of a limited partner and a general partner. Mr. Cohen was the sole limited partner in an oil and gas partnership. SJBC was the managing general partner, and the defendant, W. Scott Moore, was the principal that directed and controlled all the actions on behalf of the general partner. The evidence and the record show that the general partner committed repeated breaches of fiduciary duty in his capacity as directing the general partner in this particular partnership. It began in the year 2000 when the partnership sold $3.5 million of oil and gas properties, and those breaches continued through 2005 when the partnership received its remaining $650,000 of production payments. The general partner, through Mr. Moore, purported to take all that money, 100% of it, and apply it to management fees that it was not entitled to, and to pay expenses that were unrelated to the partnership and that benefited Mr. Moore personally and Mr. Moore's other business. Further, the general partner and Mr. Moore failed to properly disclose any of these items concerning the partnership to Mr. Cohen. As a result of those breaches of fiduciary duty, Mr. Cohen was compelled to go through two stages of arbitration proceedings and two actions in Denver District Court to confirm the arbitration awards. Post-judgment, in August of 2005, only following the confirmation of the second arbitration award, did Mr. Cohen finally receive a payment of $309,000 for his rightful share of partnership proceeds. What remains now in the proceeding is Mr. Cohen's claim to attorney's fees and costs incurred in connection with those breaches of fiduciary duty. This then brings us to the legal issue in this appeal, which is, what are the elements for a breach of fiduciary duty and recovery of attorney's fees in that context?
Do we have to go through each of those, or are we in a situation where the basis for the trial court's ruling was causation?
You're exactly right, Judge Carparelli. There's only one element. The trial court below found that three of the four elements were satisfied. There was a fiduciary duty. Mr. Cohen incurred damages in the form of attorney's fees. So all those three elements, that there was a breach of fiduciary duty, was the third. The fourth element was causation. And there, inexplicably, the district court decided that the breaches of fiduciary duty had not caused Mr. Cohen to incur attorney's fees. We submit, under the prevailing standard of review, there is no competent evidence to support a finding that the breaches of fiduciary duty did not cause damages. If you look at what reasoning the district court used for that, it was rather sparse, but what the district court said was that Mr. Moore had paid to Mr. Cohen Mr. Cohen's rightful share of partnership proceeds, and that was the district court's reasoning why there wasn't causation. The erroneous nature, however, of this reasoning is illustrated well by the fact that the judge didn't mention, which is that payment only occurred after Mr. Cohen had completed the entire arbitration and judicial confirmation proceeding. The record will show that it wasn't until July of 2005 that the Denver District Court confirmed the arbitration award. The arbitration proceeding was in early 2005. There was a lengthy confirmation proceeding, which finally concluded with Mr. Cohen having to hire attorneys and accountants with a confirmation of that arbitration award. And it was only 1 month later, in August of 2005, that Mr. Moore finally made payment. And then not of any attorney's fees, but of the principal and interest that was owing to Mr. Cohen as his share of partnership proceeds.
Mr. Kimmel, go ahead.
Let me ask you, in this proceeding, is Mr. Cohen seeking attorney's fees that he incurred for the period November 19, 2003 through February 17, 2004? In the appellee's brief, they broke it down into three different periods of time. And I'm looking at the first period of time, and I'm wondering if you are seeking attorney's fees for that period, how do you respond to the fact that Cohen 1, decided by another division of this court, concluded that the trial court properly dismissed that part of Mr. Cohen's complaint which sought attorney's fees and costs establishing the breaches of fiduciary duty recognized in the February 2004 order?
The answer to that is yes, with qualification, which is this. What the Court of Appeals said the last time this came before the Court of Appeals was that Mr. Cohen is entitled to seek recovery of attorney's fees incurred in connection with a second arbitration proceeding. Now, the second arbitration proceeding actually went to hearing in February of 04. I'm sorry, excuse me. The award for the arbitration, the first arbitration, happened in 2004. February of 04. That's where that date comes from. So yes, we agree that we are not seeking and we're not entitled to seek any attorney's fees in connection with the first arbitration proceeding. The reason why that February date is a little confusing is that there were certain actions that took place between November 03, when the hearing on the first arbitration proceeding was completed. And as to that period of time, to the extent it doesn't involve the first arbitration proceeding and forms the basis of the second arbitration proceeding, the Court of Appeals ruling would not apply. The Court of Appeals is very clear. We are only entitled to seek attorney's fees as to the second arbitration proceeding. And if the court does reverse this, this will be a decision for the on remand for the trial court to determine what are the reasonable amount of attorney's fees associated with a second arbitration proceeding. But I don't think the Court of Appeals meant to have a exact cutoff date of February of 04, since the only significance of that was the date that the arbitration award was actually entered.
You're saying there were attorney's fees incurred prior to February 2004, which were not related to the first arbitration proceeding.
Exactly.
And were related to the second arbitration proceeding.
And only to the extent that we can prove they were related to the second arbitration proceeding would we be entitled to recover them. But yes, that's when part of the shenanigans began by Mr. Moore, in that it was during that interim period when the arbitration hearing had already concluded and before the award was entered, that all these proceeds started coming into the partnership, and Mr. Moore concealed them from Mr. Cohen and then purported to spend them all and disperse them to the general partner, who in turn dispersed them to Mr. Moore, and Mr. Moore took the position that he had no intent to return any of those funds. So some of those shenanigans began in December of 03. But in terms of the attorney's fees, it's only to the extent they're raised in the second proceeding. So what we contend, and I urge you to review the record carefully, there is simply no competent evidence to support any finding that the breach of fiduciary duty did not cause Mr. Cohen damages in the form of attorney's fees.
So what we have to do is to look at the causation between what particular conduct that is considered a breach and what attorney fees were incurred as a result of that conduct.
Yes.
and the conduct that you are pointing to that happened in 2004, not related to the first arbitration, what is that conduct?
There were two breaches of fiduciary duty found by the district court below. Number one, the court found that Mr. Moore had breached his fiduciary duty as to his treatment of the management fees and the subsequent $650,000 of partnership proceeds that came in after November of 2003. And among other things, the partnership agreement required the general partner to set up a reserve and to safeguard those assets. And what Mr. Moore did, as I was mentioning earlier, he distributed everything but $4,000 of that $650,000, left nothing in the partnership, and did it under circumstances where he had made no provision to return the money, and indeed testified at trial that he had no intent to return the money.
And what was the second one?
To himself and his family. That was one.
All right. And what attorney fees were incurred? What attorney fees did that cause?
Well, what that caused was it caused a situation where the partnership submitted an accounting which attempted to sanction that. The accounting did not, contrary to the arbitration award, did not require the money to be paid back, the disallowed management fees to be paid back by the managing partner. There was just $4,000 left. The accounting called it a deemed distribution, did not set up an accounts receivable, and thus Mr. Cohen was faced with a situation where he was suing a partnership that only had $4,000 of income left, and the purpose of going through the arbitration proceeding and challenging the accounting was to make some provision for him to get his money back and to overturn the treatment of the partnership proceeds as perpetuated by that breach of fiduciary duty.
So would we be doing basically a but-for kind of an analysis that, notwithstanding the fact that the accounting by the arbitrators was, I guess, in your view, flawed, that but for the shenanigans, as you call them, there would have been none of this?
No, I'm sorry. We're not claiming that the arbitrators had what the arbitrators did is, in the first arbitration award, they ordered Mr. Moore to do an accounting and to restore the disallowed management fees back into the partnership.
Okay.
He refused to do that. He submitted an accounting which purported to sanction what he had done, and that led to the second arbitration proceeding.
Very well. Thank
you. Now, the second breach of fiduciary duty, to fully answer your question, found by the trial court below, was that Mr. Moore had misapplied the partnership proceeds to pay expenses of businesses that were unrelated to the partnership and to pay expenses that he shouldn't have. For example, the partnership, pursuant to the arbitrator's order, essentially had gone out of business, active business, when they had sold all their oil and gas properties in the year 2000. The arbitrators found there was no need for an office after that date. It was just a matter of wind-up activities. What Mr. Moore did is he charged the full rent, which was about $2,500 a month, of this premises to the partnership right through the end of 2005. Even though the facts indicated that space was used by his other businesses, and indeed the directory in the building listed four other businesses that Mr. Moore conducted there and did not list this partnership. So what the arbitrators found in rejecting the accounting done by Mr. Moore was that he had improperly applied partnership monies to pay his own expenses. And that was another one that required Mr. Cohen to hire attorneys and accountant and an expert accountant in order to contest that breach of fiduciary duty, and again, in order to obtain his rightful share of partnership proceeds.
Mr. Kimmel, let me interrupt you before we run out of time. These two breaches of fiduciary duty that you have just mentioned, were those determined by the arbitrators in the first arbitration award? And you're saying that other activities by Mr. Moore with regard to those breaches carried forward after that, after the arbitration award was entered in February 2004?
Remember, there were two arbitration awards.
Correct.
They both found breaches of fiduciary duty.
The same ones?
No, different ones. The first one was when the $3.5 million came into the partnership in 2000. And what Mr. Moore did at that point was he said, although I've never billed you for these management fees in the past, really I earned management fees throughout the 1980s and the 90s. And therefore all that $3.5 million belongs to me and none to you. That was the first breach. The second breach is then concern what we've been talking about today in the second partnership, the remaining $650,000 that came into play in 2004 and 2005.
Determined in the second arbitration.
Second arbitration.
That's my
which
question.
Is then what we got confirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Gary Davenport, and I represent the estate of Scott Moore. Obviously, at a certain point, I represented Mr. Moore himself, but he is now deceased. I would like to first of all make something clear based upon a few questions that were asked. That is, no arbitration panel ever awarded 1 cent worth of attorney's fees in any proceeding before it at all. In fact, it specifically denied the award of attorney's fees and said to Mr. Cohen, Mr. Cohen, if you wish to pursue this further, you can go elsewhere to do this. He did this through Judge Lemon. Originally, we filed a motion to dismiss. The case was dismissed. It was remanded. We then had a full trial, very well conducted by Judge McGahee. He found no causation pursuant to our language, which I think is completely supportable in the record. Just to talk about the standard of review for a moment, as this court, I'm sure, is very well aware that the issue of causation is one of fact for either the judge or the jury to decide. It's clear here the issue on which Judge McGahee decided this case was on causation, because if you will recall, he found the first three elements. Then on the last element, the judge says, I find the evidence to be equal. Mr. Cohen has the burden of proof. He did not sustain his burden of proof. Therefore, his case fails. That is precisely what Judge McGahee did. And I will submit to you that the record is absolutely replete with evidence on this causation issue. The trial court found that Mr. Moore breached the fiduciary duty on two things, these interim payments that he made. Recall that in November, there is an arbitration hearing. No order is issued. During the interim, contingent funds came into the partnership. Mr. Moore, relying upon what had happened at the arbitration and a prior Bowen Edwards arbitration, felt comfortable in paying the money out and paying expenses. He did so. He was told in February by the arbitration panel, you couldn't do that. That's not appropriate to do. Now, what happens next is absolutely critical to understanding this causation issue. The thing to look at, I believe, the standard for this court to look at in reviewing what Judge McGahee did, is there any support or is there no support for his finding of no causation? Because if there's any support, then I believe that this court must affirm the trial court. I simply feel that is the clear law in the state of Colorado, and would cite to the court the case of Wilson versus Kittredge, a case of this court, 899 Pacific 2nd, 319, which clearly sets forth the standard. Now, what is the record then on causation? What happened here? November 3rd, we have the arbitration. The ruling comes out on February 17th, and the management fees are disallowed. And attorney's fees, Mr. Cohen's request for attorney's fees are disallowed.
They weren't really disallowed by the arbitrator. The arbitrator said that's not before us. Is that right?
No, they disallowed them vis-a-vis the partnership. See, okay. Mr. Cohen, Mr. Moore is not a party to this.
Okay.
He's not even a party to any of these arbitration proceedings, so anything could be. They flat say no attorney's fees. They flat say in the arbitration award in February, no attorney's fees. They flat say in the accounting award, no attorney's fees against the partnership, which is the only party to this proceeding. So back to looking at the facts in the case on causation. You get to the period of time then after February when the award comes out. And if you'll recall, the Court of Appeals has said no attorney's fees before that time. It's barred by collateral estoppel. That's already dealt with. So we now look to the period of time, and I'll take it from February 04 to August of 04. What happens? There is a significant amount of litigation that transpires that is set forth on page 7 and 8 of our briefs. The litigation was motions to modify. We had cut down the period Mr. Cohen could claim for on a motion for summary judgment argument, had to bring his claims within 1 year. We were successful in that. We didn't think that the arbitrators had taken that into consideration, filed a motion to modify. They filed a motion to freeze. There was a motion to vacate. There was a motion to confirm. None of this had anything whatsoever to do with these interim payments or expenses that had been paid out. In fact, Mr. Cohen doesn't even know about them till August. So it's clear, none of anything that goes on. And interestingly enough, Judge McGahey at paragraph 8 makes a specific finding that all of the pleadings that were filed by Moore or his estate were filed in good faith, no violation of Colorado Rule 11, and further, that all counsel were operating ethically and properly. Goes for Mr. Cohen's counsel as well. Everybody was adjudicating, is this award appropriate? We want it confirmed. We want it set aside for a variety of arguments. Then we get to August. What happens then? In response to a motion to freeze, Mr. Cohen is made aware of what money is in the partnership. He now knows that these interim payments had been made. Judge Gilman then confirms the motion and orders the accounting to be done. This is absolutely critical, I think, in analyzing the causation issue. I think it's clear there's no causation whatsoever for any attorney's fees whatsoever Mr. Cohen has incurred to this point. What happens now? Now, we're ordered to file an accounting. Judy Kane, who is one of a very well-respected CPA, oil and gas CPA in this city, who testified as an expert on behalf of the estate, or Mr. Moore at that time, did the accounting. She brought back in all of the interim payments. What we're really doing here is figuring out what Mr. Cohen's capital account is so he can be paid. He's no longer a partner after September of 04. That's a firm ruling that's never been appealed in this case. That was a ruling made by Judge Gilman pursuant to a contempt citation he filed late in the game. So all we're trying to do is figure out what is he owed. Judy Kane brings back in all of the payments. That accounting is submitted. It is objected to. The accounting is objected to. How the accounting is prepared. Remember, the payment issue, the interim payments, are already embedded and back in. That's how you get to the $309,000 for Mr. Cohen. That comes back in. They complained then in the subsequent hearing in November about, well, no, it's in January. Pardon me, January of 05 then, they complained in that proceeding that, well, you didn't credit her with interest. And they say, well, that's a breach of some sort of duty. No, it wasn't found to be a breach of any duty at all. The arbitration panel had said, we will figure the interest on this account after we get to what the capital account is. All right, where are we now? We have now had what's called the second arbitration proceeding, and still no causation relating to anything. What would they be litigating over? Would they be litigating over the fact that the payments weren't brought back in? Of course not. They were brought back in. They were litigating over a variety of other issues, which were all taken care of in the accounting. And when the accounting award comes out by the panel, I believe it's in April of 05, the panel rules the accounting was done in complete good faith. Here's the number, and no attorney's fees, period, from the partnership. That's where we are now in April of 05. We then move forward through the spring into August of 05, and during that time period, a motion is filed to confirm the award, an offer is made to pay it in full, pleadings are filed saying, here's the $309,000, Mr. Cohen refuses to accept it. We have to file a motion within Judge Gilman again saying, Judge, please do something here. We are tendering the full amount that's been awarded in this arbitration. Judge Gilman finally says, fine, you tender it. He has 10 days to accept it, and if he doesn't, I enter a satisfaction of judgment. Well, with that kind of pressure, he finally accepts it. So we now have the money accepted. The money's been paid. There's never been a dollar's worth of harm to this man as a result of those interim payments made by Scott Moore. Not one nickel. He gets every penny if those interim payments never are made. And none of this was about litigating a breach of fiduciary duty about the interim payments. It was all about collateral things in the arbitration. Mr. Cohen also files a motion for contempt citation with Judge Gilman, saying, I still want all of the partnership records. We contest that, saying he was not a partner after September of 04. She agrees, dismisses the contempt citation, and the matter is virtually over. Done. No attorney's fees awarded. He's paid in full, period. So where do we wind up then? We wind up then with more litigation. And what's this? What's the litigation now? And by the way, before I forget it, I'd like the court to pay particular attention to paragraph 13 of Judge McGahee's order, wherein he says, on April 4th, 2005, the panel issued the accounting order. In the accounting order, the panel denied Cohen's claims for attorney's fees and expert costs in objecting to the accounting supplied by the partnership. The panel further found as to attorney's fees and costs in the arbitration proceeding that the accounting was not submitted in bad faith. Now, had Mr. Cohen done anything during this entire time period in terms of a personal action against Mr. Moore, in which he would have incurred attorney's fees to try to force Mr. Moore to put money back in the partnership? No, he hasn't done a thing. As a matter of fact, when the final accounting award is entered, we know what the capital account is. Mr. Moore voluntarily pays this. He didn't put one bit of judicial pressure in any way, shape, or form on Mr. Moore to voluntarily take that act. And in fact, that mention is made of that as well in Judge McGahee's ruling. Now, what happens next? They file a lawsuit, and I believe this lawsuit is filed sometime in November of 05. Remember, he's paid in full at this point. November of 05 with Judge Gilman, or pardon me, Judge Lemon now. Judge Lemon rules on a motion to dismiss in favor of the estate, dismisses the case, it goes up on appeal, is remanded back down on the basis that he stated a claim for relief. That's the case that we tried before Judge McGahee in detail for 2 days with detailed testimony from all parties about what was litigated, when was it litigated, what were the issues. The judge was fully informed of everything that transpired and came to the conclusion he came to: no causation, period. And I suggest to this court that to say there is nothing in the record which supports that finding of no causation, and it doesn't have to be 100% right, all it has to be is there any support for it? I suggest to you it is all the support in the record. There is no support in this record that this man incurred a dime of attorney's fees for anything other than the arbitration proceeding and pleadings that all have been found to have been filed in good faith at all times with all counsel, clients acting properly. We then go forward, try the case, the judge enters the order that he enters, which we're all well aware of. Now, I think actually it shines some real light on why we're here today when you read a couple of things that are contained in the appellate's brief. The appellate's brief says on page 6, whether or not respondents' motions were filed in good faith, and it was found that they weren't even challenged as not being in bad faith, as found by the district court, Mr. Cohen was clearly compelled to engage legal counsel to preserve and validate the arbitration award. The mark that's missed here is you must draw the nexus between the breaches of fiduciary duty that have been found and the causal connection. He's just saying in the briefs, and it's said throughout the briefs, hey, he had to undertake attorney's fees to get his award and get paid his award. He did. We filed a motion to clarify. We wanted the statute of limitations to play. They responded. They filed a motion to freeze. We responded. We filed motions to force him to take the money. They refused the money. All that has nothing to do with breaches of fiduciary duty and were found by the trial court to have been done in good faith. So in close, I suggest to you that Mr. Cohen has had multiple opportunities to ask people for attorney's fees in this case. It is not, it just has gone on and on and on. This case started in 2002. He has been paid every dime he was entitled to. He has been paid every dime that he was entitled to, regardless of whether these interim payments were ever made or not. And he has yet to show this court one nickel that he underwent as a result of forcing the payment to be made to him. It was post-arbitration litigation that was concluded, and when concluded, in favor of 3 out of Mr. Cohen's 10 claims for breach of fiduciary duty, the gentleman was paid in full. I got 8 seconds left.
So. Yes, and we might even extend that. We can. The second arbitration resulted in the accounting.
Correct.
And how much legal activity occurred prior to the arbitrators directing that Ms. Kane make an accounting?
Well, that was that whole period of time between February and August where there are motions to modify. And by the way, I might add, on a motion to modify that we filed with the panel, it was a 2-1 split vote. So there was one arbitrator that said, they're right, this ought to be barred by the statute of limitations, which I think, you know, obviously Judge McGahee took into account in making his determination of good faith. But that's an important window that you've pointed to, and that's the motion to modify, the defense of the motion to modify, the motion to freeze, the defense of the motion to freeze, the motion to confirm the award, et cetera, that all went on during that time period before, on September 30th of 04, Judge Gilman orders that the account, well, she ordered it like on the 5th, and it was done on the date she ordered it to be filed, bringing back in all of the things to credit Mr. Cohen's capital account appropriately.
And the motion to modify did not address that issue, you're saying? The motions to modify occurred before Mr. Cohen knew about these improper expenditures?
Absolutely.
So the litigation did not address that?
Absolutely not.
Did the litigation request that the arbitrators obtain more information and seek an accounting?
No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Kimball, I believe time has expired. Was there time left?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had reserved.
No, when that yellow light came on, you needed to stop, and you didn't. Let me. I'll give you 1 minute right now. Would
okay.
you give him a minute?
Really appreciate your courtesy. The harm to Mr. Cohen was that he was compelled to contest the arbitration. He was compelled to contest the accounting that was performed at the first arbitration award. Required an accounting. That accounting was done. It showed $193,000 going to Mr. Cohen. Mr. Cohen was compelled to hire counsel in order to contest that. He was successful and ultimately obtained a $306,000 award by the arbitrators in distinct contravention of the $193,000. The reason why that involved the fiduciary duty is all these expenses that were the result of breach of fiduciary duty had been charged to Mr. Cohen. And the only way that Mr. Cohen was able to restore his account to the $306,000 amount that was decided by the arbitrators was to contest the accounting through the second arbitration proceeding and then have the award of the court confirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is now submitted. And we will issue an opinion in due course.